Hello, welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. A bad day at the office for Liverpool, losing at St Mary's by 1-0 on Monday. Here to reflect on that match, Don Hutchinson, Stevie Nicol and Craig Burley. Stevie, that's three games now without a win. What's going on?
I think it's pretty clear where the problems are, and it's up front. You know, the front three are not producing, not delivering. They're not even creating, pretty much. You know, yes, Newcastle, they made opportunities, but the Southampton game and the West Brom game, they never created anything. And so if you're not going to create, then you ain't going to score goals.
I will go to Craig in a moment, but I feel the urge to go to Don and tell him that ever since you told us that there's going to be an easy win against West Brom and Newcastle, Don, it's all gone wrong.
Yeah, I've sort of jinxed it, haven't I? I've jinxed it massively. I mean, no one would have saw that coming, though, Dan, would they? I mean, West Brom, you would have thought guaranteed points. Newcastle, terrible. But Liverpool only scored one goal in the three games since the 7-0 win against Palace. I mean, just bizarre. I mean, you can have a look at the injuries. And you can go, well, you know, they've got so many injuries at the back. But going forward, you know, absolutely toothless. Mane was the only one at the three tonight who kept on going right till the very end. And the lack of creativity.
Is this a blip, Craig, or something to be more concerned about?
No, it's to be concerned about because this is not just a one-off. The away form, as well as the front three that Stevie mentioned, has been poor. And we talked about it 5 or 6 days ago that unless that away form changed, they're unlikely to be Premier League champions this year because you just can't, you know, go away from home and perform like that and the games that they have. Southampton, who are decent, you know, Fulham, Brighton, Villa, which was a big shock, amongst other games, you just can't do it. But I'm just glad we've managed to track Hutchinson down, you know. It's like the famous, where are they going to drop points? Look at the next two games. You know, West Brom and Newcastle, where are they? I mean, it's, you know, it's just so tight this year. And I think, I heard somebody say the lowest amount of points by a team leading the league at this point for almost 20 years. And that's what I said the other day. It's really concertina this league. But they're not playing well. You know, get two midfielders playing centre-half. Full-backs are getting forward, but they're not whipping the ball in with the same quality that they once were. We had Trent Alexander-Arnold giving the ball away for fun this evening, and he made a poor mistake for the goal. So it's all happening for Liverpool in the wrong sense that when you look at Man City yesterday, and I know Stevie called it a masterclass, and listen, it was bloody close to that because it was smooth and it was silk and it was effective, and they are defending well. When you look at the two sides at the moment and current form, you know, City look as if they're going to be potentially the team to beat.
Don, you were quite vocal on Twitter about Salah.
Yeah, I've not seen him in the two games. I didn't see him in the Newcastle game. I didn't see him in the game tonight. He's drifting in and out of games. You know, ever since he came out and made those comments about Real Madrid and Barcelona, I don't know if there's anything in that, maybe. But it looks as though his head's been turned somewhere because, you know, at least when I watched Sadio Mane tonight, Dan, I could see a player that was really trying. Firmino was trying as well, but he didn't really have a good game. His link-up play was not as good as usual. But I was tweeting on, you know, where's Mo Salah? Is he actually playing? Obviously, I was being sarcastic, but he's not performed in a couple of games. And for a guy that's, you know, so prolific and got great numbers, he does drift in and out of games. And the body language looks awful at the moment.
Dan, you know, this is where Klopp comes into it as well and earns his corn because, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, things are not going well. This is wrong. This is right. This is wrong. The fact is, these three games we're talking about, they've had over 70% of the ball in every game. So it's not a complete and utter shambles. The fact is that Klopp now has to have a word, and a quiet word, and a clever word with the front three. You know, sometimes it's just about a little nugget that you give a player. Like say Mane, you know, why don't you say to Mane, look, you're standing in the box. You're standing with your back to goal all the time. Can you get yourself half-turned? That's half a yard in the box. And so when you're playing against teams that are defending as ruthlessly as Southampton did today in the box, then that gives you an edge. Salah's the same. You know, instead of always looking to either run in or again be standing in the box, why don't you stand a little wider, a little deeper, because with the feet he's got, no defender wants him running at him. So it's all just little nuggets that's going to make the difference, with the front three in particular. Because the rest of it's okay. You know, you can't be that bad if you're having 70% of the ball, regardless of whether you're at home or away. So this is where Klopp needs to earn his corn by being smart and just having a little word with the front three.
Klopp admitted after the game that Liverpool didn't deserve to win. However, he did bring up the fact, Craig, that he felt his team should have had two penalties, the handball and the challenge on Mane. Is he right?
Don't think so, no. Try to think back. The challenge on Mane was by Walker Peters, where he kind of leaned into him a little bit, and then Mane then leaned back into him. There was nowhere near enough. The handball, I mean, my goodness, if we're given... I mean, the arm was down by the side, and the arm was out a little bit, but then the shot was from such close quarters that I personally don't think it was. And, you know, so he did think his team deserved to win. I mean, it's just hypocritical. But we didn't deserve to win, but we should have had two penalties. Well, if you think you should have had two penalties, then you probably deserve to win, because the chances are you would have scored. I mean, he's just going to have to look in rather than look out here. He's going to have to shake his squad up. Whether they do anything in the window remains to be seen. I'll go back to that old point, though. When the front three is not operating, and when they need something different, they haven't got it off the bench. They haven't got somebody like Hutchinson at the back post. Comes in, puts their head on it. Nothing wrong with that, you know, when there's no other space and all these guys have got... These teams are putting 9-10 behind the ball, and you've got Alexander-Arnold and Robertson. I mean, Robertson turned back a few times in that second half, you know.
Oh.
To go back to Stevie's point, he had Mane in the box. He tried to slip it to him a couple of times, which he did. But on two or three occasions, and he was in a position to whip it in, he turned back. They went out. They went out to Thiago. They went back to Fabinho. They went back out the other side, but with no real pace. And it just gave Southampton a chance to organise. Listen, this league is really up for grabs because, as I said, I think it was yesterday or Saturday, that Liverpool in particular are not doing what they did last year. I mean, that's just quite obvious, and that's given the rest of the runners and riders a chance.
Penalty, Stevie?
I wouldn't have given the Mane challenge with Walker Peters. I thought exactly what Craig did. It was, you know, both of them were just coming together, and he went down. However, I would have given the penalty, and the reason I would have given the penalty is because, in my opinion, Stevens is 5 yards away from the shot, and he's turning his body round. I think his arm is slightly away from his body. It hits him right in the hand. It's going towards goal. So for that reason, I would actually have given it.
Don, you feel that the Premier League in general have somewhat diluted the handball restrictions? I think at the start of the season that would have been given. Was it right not to be given this time, do you feel?
Yeah, 100%. I disagree with Stevie. I thought Jack Stevens had his hands sort of quite low, even though the shot was taken from a little bit of distance. It wasn't a penalty. I didn't think the Pogba one was a penalty the other day, and I didn't think Sadio Mane's was a penalty neither. Both identical sort of scenarios, if you like. Both players getting clipped or clipping each other or clipping the defenders. And I think the referee made the right call tonight on both occasions. And I didn't think Pogba's was a penalty when he caught the back of Douglas Luiz's calf. So, yeah, I think what we're asking for, and I think what social media is saying tonight, well, any chance of consistency. But for me, I think the referee, Andre Mariner, made the right calls tonight.
That's interesting because, Stevie, you were on after the Paul Pogba penalty was awarded and you felt that it was. What was the difference between that challenge and the one we saw tonight?
Well, the difference is that both parties are going towards each other. You know, the difference with Pogba. Pogba's got nothing to do with Douglas Luiz. Douglas Luiz is behind Pogba. So if there's going to be any contact, then it's going to come from Douglas Luiz. That's the biggest difference. You know, Walker Peters and Mane have gone shoulder to shoulder pretty much. They're both gesturing towards each other, whereas Pogba's ahead of Douglas Luiz. And so, as I said yesterday, the other day, the onus is on the defender not to get tangled up with the opponent, particularly if he's behind them.
Liverpool fans will be apoplectic, I suppose, in some way that they're seeing, rightly or wrongly, all these penalties at Old Trafford or for Man United. They've had an immense amount of penalties this year, and they're going to feel hard done by. I don't have the answers to that because I'm obviously not refereeing or in the VARs. I don't know why that is, but that's not let's not paper over the fact that that's not where they are. Well, where they are, the top of the league at the moment. But that's not why the league is so tight. That's not why they're all of a sudden beatable. That's not why they've lacked the intensity and the pace about the game. And in many ways, the awe that they carried last year, when whenever they pitched up home and away, you were trembling because it could have been game over within 20 minutes. And that has gone for the time being now. Is it because they won the league at such a canter last year that they've been brilliant for a couple of years and that the foot's off the gas a little bit, as Don mentioned, one or two heads maybe turned? Wijnaldum's contract is up in the summer. Salah's talked about a move. Or is it the squad? Is it the COVID pandemic and the Van Dijk injury and other injuries? What is it? We really don't know. But what we do know is, for the time being, the fear factor is gone.
Well, Liverpool was so good. They were settled. It was a settled side. The side picked itself. He didn't really need to make that many changes at any particular stage. And, of course, right now, we're just looking at a completely different scenario where you've got two of your three centre midfielders today playing at centre-back. You've got two of your three centre midfielders today in Thiago and Oxlade-Chamberlain that have hardly kicked a ball, but yet they've still got more than 70% of the ball. So, it's the biggest problem is they haven't had a settled side. It's changed so much at the back and in the middle. But again, if the front three can sort themselves out, they can still win the Premier League.
Yeah, that's the counter-argument, I suppose, Stevie, is the fact that despite all the problems they've had at the back, and as you mentioned, midfielders having to go into defence, that front three that has been so pivotal to their success over the last couple of seasons is nowhere near where it should be in the quality to get them across the line this time round, isn't it?
No, exactly. And as Craig said earlier, they don't really have any choices. You know, with Jota injured, you can't not play them. And as I said, if you can't give them a little nugget to grasp onto, then they're going to have to play through it. And Klopp's going to have to hope that it's not going to take too long to play through it. Otherwise, they're going to find themselves behind in the title race.
Everybody else has had injuries as well. I mean, you look at Southampton today, there was four of them key players out. Certainly three of the four. Redmond was out, Romeo was out, who's been a big player for them, Vestergaard was out, and Che Adams was out. So, we had, it's all relative really to squad size and quality. So they had players out. We've seen City perform with a COVID hit squad and have had no Aguero for the bulk of the season. We've seen Man United having to make changes. Okay, but I think Bruno Fernandes has been a constant and been a big player for them. But I think everybody's had to deal with it. I just think Liverpool have lost a step, and everybody's having to figure out the squads and their injuries and all the problems that go with it, and Liverpool are just another team that's going to have to do that. But if I was Man City, I'd be licking my chops. I know United are in there, I know there's a few other teams in there, but if I was Man City, not just off the back of yesterday, but the fact that they're defending better, the fact that Aguero's still to come back, the fact that De Bruyne got his first goal from open play yesterday suggests that the best is yet to come from them. It's going to be tight, but if I was Man City, I would be licking my chops at the chance of being Premier League champions again.
We'll talk about City in a moment, but let me just remind you that Extra Time, as always, available on our YouTube channel. Be sure to check it out.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
The big talking point from the Premier League this weekend surely had to be Manchester City's 3-1 victory against Chelsea. Craig, it's the first time we've had the chance to talk to you about this game. Where do you want to start, City or Chelsea?
No, I'd start with City because they were magnificent. You know, when you think about the five COVID absentees, you think about Aguero still chasing his fitness. They had no natural striker. They had Zach Steffen, the US keeper, making his Premier League debut. And they completely pulverised Chelsea, completely in that first half. And yeah, it finished 3-1 and they gave away a sloppy goal at the end. And you saw how frustrated they were. But, you know, the game was dead and buried when they went in for the cup of tea at half-time. The job was already done. So it was I thought mesmerising play. I thought the way De Bruyne and Sterling and Foden floated about in particular, just Chelsea couldn't handle it. So it was, you know, I thought it was the best 45 in the Premier League I'd seen this season. Some might say Villa, Liverpool. Some might say Spurs at Old Trafford. But I just thought control, that City performance was a marker, a real marker put down. And when you think about potentially Aguero coming back in for the second half of the season, rested, if his body holds up, they're going to be a tough nut to crack. On the other side of the coin, for Mikel Arteta, read Frank Lampard, because he's got Fulham, he's got an FA Cup game at Morecambe, but he's got Fulham, Leicester and Wolves. Now, we talked about Arteta with three games, which he went on to win. And I think we're going to put Lampard in that category, because as tough as it is, it's a results business. And as we sit here now, they're in ninth. They're not playing well. They've just been pummeled again. And he's searching for answers. Now, there's some people out there saying, well, they're only 7 points off the top, which is right. And he's got time to turn it around. But he's going to have to turn it around, because the owner doesn't suffer results like this. And from what we hear, they're already having discussions behind the scenes about a potential successor. So they're putting those building blocks in play already, which is never a good sign, in case Lampard can't turn that around. I mean, it's as simple as that. He's got January or thereabouts to get results. Otherwise, he could be gone.
Don, has he got what it takes? Have we seen enough from Frank Lampard to suggest that, yes, he can turn this ship around?
Well, I think he has to be given time, Dan. I mean, there is mitigating circumstances. When you look at the lack of form from Timo Werner and the, you know, how sort of awful Kai Havertz has been, but COVID is
Isn't that his job, so though, Frank? Isn't that the coach's job to get your players performing?
No, absolutely right. I mean, listen, when Frank picked his side against Man City, I thought it was bold playing Timo Werner. I looked at the other 10 and I would have picked exactly the same 10. I wouldn't have picked Timo Werner. I would have played Giroud or Tammy Abraham, but he's obviously trying to play Timo Werner from bad form into good form. But the other 10, I would have went exactly the same. He's in a bad run of form, and Craig's hit the nail on the head. You know, we talk about these young managers. We talk about Frank just because he manages a club like Chelsea. We talk like Arteta's managing a club like Arsenal, and Ollie because he's managing a club like Man United, that they're going to compete with the likes of Guardiola, Klopp, Mourinho, Carlo Ancelotti. These guys have been steeped in the game for 20 plus years. The new guys on the block are trying to get to that level at gigantic football clubs. Now, just think, it told us really where Chelsea were compared to Man City. Man City were brilliant on the day. And honestly, the first half could have been ridiculously messy. You know, Man City could have been 6-0 up. I thought they were truly back. I thought they were back in the Newcastle game, the game before. But I couldn't really judge them because it was Newcastle and they were poor. But this Man City side, the way he didn't play two holding midfield players. And I understand why he did over the last few months, because he wanted that sort of insurance at the back. And he went away and he just played Gundogan, he played Bernardo Silva, and he played Rodri. And they were so much better when they were going forward, having that extra body in midfield to drive on.
Didn't you write them off earlier on in the season, Don?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether Klopp's got 20 years or Guardiola's got X amount or whatever, because at the end of the day, he's been tasked with managing this club. And if he doesn't go to his board and say, Don, there's mitigating circumstances here. The millions that we have spent on these players that were playing very well in their own countries, they're not playing well. Well, I want results.
Yeah, that, I get that.
That's what Abramovich will say. I don't spend,
I get that, Stevie,
2 to 3 million to be in ninth place.
I get that, Craig, sorry. I get that. And Frank is obviously not going to say that, but that's the perspective I can give when I see young managers trying to forge their way into Premier League and trying to compete with some of the gigantic managers. You know, that can't be easy.
Yeah.
Now, Frank's an intelligent guy.
Chelsea's not a stepping stone for young managers. And as harsh as this is, if he doesn't get results, he's going to be out. Now, listen, and a perfect, like all these guys to be given time, but you show me a manager that's never been sacked in his career. There's not many. And listen, Abramovich cannot afford to be outside the top four. Now, there is time to turn this around. There is no doubt about it. But what there is a huge doubt off the back of one season at Derby County and one season without a transfer budget that Lampard is going to be given time to turn this ship around. So Chelsea's not some little place yet for a young manager to come in and try and gain experience. Abramovich needs results, and he's ruthless, Don. He's ruthless, and if they're already looking at alternatives, that's already telling you that they have a doubt long-term that Frank Lampard is going to be able to turn this around.
But do we not talk Mikel Arteta anymore then? Because 3 weeks ago, we were saying Arteta's under massive pressure and he could be gone. And all of a sudden, three wins on the spin, he's 3 points away, sorry, 6 points away from the top four. So fast forward a week's time, if Chelsea beat Fulham, they could be back in the top four. So we can't just keep chucking it back and forth. Frank should be sacked. Frank needs to be given time. Arteta should be sacked. He needs to be given time. He needs to be given a season.
The problem Frank has is that his owner is Abramovich. Abramovich couldn't care less whether the fans liked, disliked, or whatever the thoughts were on the manager, if he's getting unless he's getting results. He doesn't care. He's sitting with trillions and millions of money. You think he cares whether, it's not fair on Frank, he hasn't been given time. He's only interested in what the results are, and if the results are going against whoever the manager is too often, then guess what? They're out the door. So, unfortunately for Frank, that's the scenario. Personally, I would give him more time, but it's Abramovich, and so he could pull the plug anytime.
I'm not suggesting Lampard should be sacked, but I mean, if you talk to me in 3 weeks' time and he's lost the next three Premier League games, then he's going to have to go, right? Because that's the scenario that we're in. That is the business that we're in, whether we want to give all these guys a chance or not. So I'm clearly saying it's up to him to turn it around, and it's up to him to get in his players' heads. It's up to him to pick the right team. He's got every chance because, I mean, Fulham, they should be beaten, although they have improved. Leicester's going to be a tough one, and Wolves have had a topsy-turvy season with a squad that's a little thinner and a lot thinner than last year. So he has the opportunity. And Mikel Arteta, short term, gave himself some breathing space by getting results. And that's what Lampard has to do. He's got to buy himself enough time to convince the manager that he's got enough to take this team forward. If he doesn't, he's out.
Go on, Don.
No, I agree. I agree with what you said there. I just think we can't just keep having a Frank Lampard loses two games, he should be gone. Arteta loses a few games, he should be gone. I think we need to have a little bit of perspective and try and I know what the boys are saying, and they're absolutely right about these chairmen, especially Abramovich. They won't wait for no man. But all I'm trying to give is a perspective of what Frank's had to deal with since taking the Chelsea job. Remarkable job last year on a budget that just wasn't even there. This year, the turnover players has been ridiculous. There's no guarantee if Frank Lampard left Chelsea tomorrow and say Thomas Tuchel come in, results are going to improve ridiculously, you know, high end from where they were, because he's going to have to deal with it with turnover of new players. He's still got the seven or eight players that he's got to try and get going. He's still got to try and get Kai Havertz to spit in and Timo Werner get going. So I'm not saying Frank Lampard should stay forever. I agree with what Craig finished with there, where he needs to be given time and he needs to buy time to try and get out of this messy situation that he's in, then try and have a good, good January, good Feb, and have a strong end to the season. At the moment, that's way off. The Fulham game's the next one on his mind. Morecambe first in the FA Cup, try and get a win there, then turn over Fulham and get some sort of confidence and go on a mini run. That's all Frank can do.
But he's got this job because of his name. If he wasn't Frank Lampard, he wouldn't be the coach of Chelsea right now, Don. And I suppose those who are already starting to question whether or not he's the right man for the job would suggest, look, if this was Andres Villas-Boas, you'd be calling for his head. But because he's Frank Lampard and because he's your mate, that's why you're not willing to criticise him.
No, not my mate at all, because what I would say, Arteta only got the job because he's Guardiola's number two, and Ole only got the Man U job because he was a legend as well. So we can't, I'm not sticking up for Frank because he's a friend of mine. You know, I'm saying like Stevie and I'm saying like Craig, the guy is under pressure. Frank's an intelligent man. He said that to the British press with it. You know, he took the job knowing he wants to be competing for titles. So he puts pressure on himself. You know, what he's saying, which I agree with after the weekend performance, is Chelsea right here, right now, are nowhere near what Man City are. But Man City have had 3 or 4 or 5 years under Pep Guardiola. So give him a little bit of time, all as I'm saying.
Well, Chelsea have a little bit of time now, a little break. Craig mentioned it, Morecambe in the FA Cup. Before that, big run of games in the Premier League, which will be a real test as to whether or not Frank Lampard is really cut out for this job. for Manchester City. Meanwhile, big game on Wednesday, Manchester United in the Carabao Cup semi-final. Be sure to join us on the next show. We'll be looking ahead to that clash.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
After this weekend's action, Bayern Munich remained top of the Bundesliga after coming from behind to beat Mainz by 5-2. On the Gavin Jules podcast on Monday, they approached the subject as to whether or not the fact that Bayern keep letting teams go ahead early on in games is a problem.
Bayern got 2 goals down against Mainz, who have only won one before this season. 8 games in a row where Bayern don't have the lead in a game. But they're coming back and won 5-2. Do you see the glass half full or half empty?
All right, I want to be clear on this. I want to put a little bit of time to this because the glass is most definitely half empty. You know, if you're one of those people who just looks at the highlights, oh, look, 5 goals, yeah, buy it, oh, look, they're so mentally strong. Not only did they go 2-0 down, they could have been 3-0 down because Mainz hit the post, right? Yeah. Poor Hansi Flick, he had to take Joshua Kimmich, his most important midfielder, get him to play right back because your boy, Benjamin Pavard, was getting so ripped to shreds. Jerome Boateng, ripped to shreds. Yeah. And then, of course, they come back because they have better players. They're playing Mainz. The only reason Mainz aren't bottom of the Bundesliga is because Schalke Gelsenkirchen happens to be in Germany. Mainz has won one game all season. They were beaten time and again by the counterattack, the ball over the top. There's reason to be worried. There's reason to be concerned.
I know they lost to Hoffenheim 4-1, but they should lose to Mainz 3-0. And
maybe that would be the wake-up call that they need.
Let's welcome in Casey Keller and Steve Cherundolo to talk about that nonsense, shall we? And boys, no, I have no idea why Gab Marcotti can't wear headphones like a normal person. Steve, is this a cause for concern? Is the glass really half empty for Bayern?
No, I disagree. I think championship teams understand how to win games even like that. Certainly, he has a point. If Mainz is a little more effective finishing, then they could maybe close this game out. But Bayern is never beaten after 45 minutes, even if Mainz does go up 3-0. They definitely have the squad and the quality to put 3 goals, 4 goals, as we saw 5 goals, past any team in this league within 45 minutes. So you can really never count them out of the game. What we are seeing is we're seeing more of the same what we've seen all season, is their Achilles heel is their back line and the athleticism that lacks in that back line. And they're being caught on the counter just one too many times. And so it's more of the same story, but I like to see things with the glass half full. And you just really have to talk about Bayern's offense that is fantastic and very effective. It can hurt you at any moment in the game.
According to our man Jana Agafjortov, KC, David Alaba is on his way to Real Madrid in the summer, his contract up at Bayern. How big a deal is this for Bayern going forward?
The situation with Bayern defensively was obviously an issue at the beginning of last season. I thought the movement of moving Alaba into center back, gave them that athleticism that Stevie just mentioned is lacking at certain times. And so, yes, it will be a huge loss. And the question mark will be then is how do they replace that? How do they strengthen that back line? Because I guarantee you, Manuel Neuer is not happy with the fact that I think it's 8 games in a row now that they've gone down, that they haven't been able to keep a clean sheet, that they haven't been able to, see a win out. Now, granted, you have a side that is more than happy to say, we will challenge you. We're going to be wide open and our skill set is going to score more goals than yours. But there's a point where Bayern, if they want to win another championship, not only in the Bundesliga, but then in Champions League, they have to be better defensively.
Steve, does it upset the dynamic of the dressing room at all, the fact that you know that one of your big star key players who's made you the best team in the world will be leaving at the end of the season?
No, I don't think so. I think these are topics and themes that are touched on every season. Players do come and go. And David Alaba has been a part of this organization for a long time. Everybody loves him. You know, he's very well liked, in the team, but also around the league and in Germany. So I really think inside, in a locker room, some of his teammates, his friends, will probably want the best for David Alaba. And that may be moving to Real Madrid this summer. Speaking particularly personal about his own interests. Now, Bayern's big task is if he does go, they now have two center backs to replace instead of one. So this really makes this transfer window in the winter break exciting and even a huge opportunity for Bayern to pick somebody up now. But certainly in the summer, they're going to have to pick up at least two center backs moving forward.
Speaking of transfers, we spent a long time, didn't we, in the off period talking about the possibility of Jadon Sancho moving to Manchester United. Obviously, that never happened. And we heard Borussia Dortmund CEO come out and say that clearly he had his head turned and that has affected his form. Steve, he scored at the weekend his first goal of the season, quite incredibly, really. I suppose from a Dortmund perspective, is that now going to be the catalyst for him to try and recapture some of that form from last season? Or is that going to be impossible for him to do now until he makes that move to United?
No, Jadon Sancho is a player with a lot of quality, and we will see the old Jason Sancho performing on all cylinders. At some point, I think this goal will definitely help, but it's only a step in the right direction. He's not there yet. I think when you review his performance on the weekend, he was second-guessing a lot of plays during the game when he did go in 1v1 situations. The old Jadon did not think about it. He just did it. He went after players, and if he got caught up once, he would keep trying and trying again until he got by the players. Now we've seen a little different player lacking confidence and not going at players, which was great to see this goal toward, even though it was the 93rd minute of the game. It was a fantastic move to get by the last defender, and then the finish was perfect. Casey knows better than we all would know. Anytime a forward finishes in full stride like that at a larger distance, almost impossible for the keeper to react. And it's really good to see. So I'm thinking, we're a few weeks out before we see the real Jadon back on the pitch, but he's taking a step in the right direction.
Casey, we hear players tell us time and time again they love going out and playing because they can forget about everything, all the other noise that's going on around in their lives. So why would talk of a transfer not happening to Manchester United affect his form this much?
Because it's impossible. You can say whatever you want, but actually doing it are two completely different things. I mean, you have something in your head, and as an Englishman, that you've got a roughly $100 million move to Manchester United, it's got to get in your head. And he's also 20 years old. That's a tough thing to get in your head. He broke into the scene so quickly and really so dynamically, with Dortmund that he garnered this huge interest, and it got to him a little bit. But I agree with Steve. One goal isn't going to change anything. It will definitely help put him in the right direction. I think we all feel that Sancho will get through this and get through it very strong. And I think it'll only make him stronger in his career if he does get through it with tremendous success.
Meanwhile, we saw Bayer Leverkusen, of course, lose ground on Bayern at the top of the table. Leipzig, though, still in touching distance after their victory. And a lot of hype about their new signing, Dominik Szoboszlai. I'm sure that's exactly how you say it in Hungarian, Steve. And genuinely, there seems to be a lot of reason to be excited about this youngster.
He is. He's a fantastic, young, talented player, Hungarian national. Has really proved what he can do in Salzburg. Also in the Champions this year has been some, that link-up player, kind of a classic number 10 position, but there's some modern elements as well where he has a direct way to goal. He has good runs in behind the back line. He's a good passer and a good finisher as well. I mean, for all purposes, and he's kind of like a young Forsberg, and Forsberg is kind of in the latter stage of his career, although we are seeing a very good Forsberg right now in Leipzig. This is the next generation coming up to fill that role. Which is extremely important for a Leipzig team. to compete in the Champions League and for the German Championship. You can't just run at teams and try to counterattack all day long. You need creative players on the pitch, passing and really fulfilling that speed that you have up top. So it's an exciting signing. I'm looking forward to see his development in Leipzig, because I know Julian Nagelsmann is also a developer as well as a top-notch coach. So great signing. Let's hope to get to see some playing time right away and see how this kid develops.
We saw Tyler Adams starting in that win for Leipzig, Steve, plus a whole host of Americans, and it feels like every time we talk every week there seems to be more and more plying their trade and starting, more importantly I suppose, right across the board.
Yeah, and I went through the names. It's a complete starting 11, so Greg has an easy job. Just put those players out for the next game. You have your first starting 11 in European top teams all over the continent, so fantastic to see. We're a little heavy on the outside back area, which we always have been, but it's really exciting to see so much quality out there on the pitch and actually making differences in these big games and leagues.
We've also saw Zach Steffen make his first start in the Premier League for Manchester City. It was a bad start after picking up the back pass, but then, Casey, it's an absolute dream, isn't it, if you're a goalkeeper making your debut, not really having to do anything, obviously conceding that very late goal, but it's nice, I imagine, to have that first match under your belt.
Well, it's always nice to get that league debut, regardless of the circumstances surrounding it. And with Ederson going into COVID protocols, it could be a match or two for Zach. And like everything it is, it's about taking advantage of the opportunities that you're given, regardless of the circumstances surrounding them. And so Zach, as you mentioned, not maybe the start he wanted, but he wasn't punished for it. And then conceding the late goal will be disappointing. But in the end, it's 3 points in a very comprehensive performance from Man City. And now really what it comes down to is finding that opportunity. Can he compete with Ederson to win that starting role? And if not, how long will he be comfortable with being a backup? So the question is still there, but great for Zach to make that debut. And now can he build off of that, knowing that he'll probably have another match or two to continue to show what he's capable of doing?
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Zach Steffen, of course, likely to start in the big game in the Carabao Cup on Wednesday. Manchester City taking on Manchester United in the semi-final of the Cup. Of course, a game you can see live on ESPN+. We'll, of course, be looking ahead to that game in some more detail on tomorrow's show. Be sure to join us. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. We'll leave you, though, with extra time. Stevie and Don are answering your tweets. Stay with us. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Don Hutchinson with me, as is Stevie Nichols. Stevie, new photos behind you to start the new week. Let's see them, shall we? Just talk us through them. One looks... It's got to be you when you were young, yeah?
Hi.
You see it there?
Yeah, we do. Now, just explain to people who don't know your family, you had two sets of twins in your family, is that right?
Yes, my two big brothers are twins. And this is my sister and myself, when we were about three, I think.
Wow.
Maybe four. So yeah, my mum had a great time.
I bet she did, that's
they
a lot of twins.
Machine.
Don, you've got twins as well.
Plenty
got,
of time.
You could, how many twins do you have, Don?
One set of twins. If we're doing this, then we're doing this.
Oh, lovely. Really went all out for those pictures, Don.
There you go. If we're doing
get
pictures,
right into it, Don.
Should we go for the big? No, just get little ones that you have to really squint to see. Right. Away from twins, would Werner have performed better under Klopp? Did he make a mistake signing for Chelsea, Stevie?
No, I don't think you can say that right now. He had a good start in the Premier League. He scored goals. He was on a good run. And he's hit what every striker does occasionally. He's on a barren run. And he actually looks as though he's run out of a little bit of juice.
Mm.
So I think there are reasons why he's not quite at his best, but he's shown already he can score goals in the Premier League. I think it's a little early for that sort of comment.
Stevie, from a coach's point of view, what do you do? Morecambe, of course, is coming up in the FA Cup. Do you play him so he can get a bag load of goals and get his confidence back? Or do you say to him, look, take a complete break, take a few days off, recharge your batteries and get ready for our next Premier League game?
Well, I think first and foremost, if it is a physical thing, then you don't play him. Because actually, if he's not physically ready, he's maybe not up for the fight, then it might make it worse. But if you think it's maybe a mental thing, then it's kind of what I said about Liverpool's front three in the show. You know, you have to find a little nugget. You have to find something that you can give your striker, whoever it may be, just to find something, find a little edge. Yeah, if it's the physical side of it, I wouldn't play him. But physically, he's in good nick. Absolutely. Every forward benefits from putting the ball in the back of the net, regardless of the opposition.
What was a nugget that someone told you, Stevie? Moran or Dalglish during your time that stuck with you?
Well, I remember Hansen coming up to me for a game once and said, he said, you know what? You stopped looking inside. And he was talking about with the ball. And I hadn't even noticed I'd done it. I was opening up and I was looking either to play Kenny, because Kenny always wanted it every single time he had it. So if you didn't look forward for him, he would tell you about it. But I got in the habit. And you don't realise you're doing it. I got in the habit of playing the same ball. And he just said to me before the game, he said, hey, by the way, you should try looking inside now and again. And all of a sudden, you make the game easier for yourself, because now the guy who's closing me down, he doesn't know where I'm going. He used to know, because I kept putting it down the line or trying to hit it forward. Now I've got an option. So just little things like that. You know, don't come out with a cracker the other day when he was talking about playing in centre midfield. Don't go running around, chasing all over the place. Sometimes you just stand still and it'll come to you. That's a classic example of a little nugget.
So it took Stevie, instantly he knew what Alan Hansen was saying. It took you 5 years to learn what Graham Souness was saying.
Yes, it took me 5 years until I was at West Ham, then I had a light bulb and I went, ding, oh yeah, Graham Souness told me to stand still. That's the ticket.
Did Werner make a mistake going to Chelsea, Don?
No, I think he got to went to Liverpool, Dan. I don't think he'd be playing. He's certainly not going to get in ahead of Mane on the left-hand side. No chance of getting his place off him. And I don't think he's ready to be a Liverpool centre-forward. So he'll be good. The big dilemma for Frank now is, and you asked Stevie the question, you know, do you play him against Morecambe? If he gets a hat full of goals and his confidence is going to be back. The flip side to that is, if you play him against Morecambe and he doesn't score, you can imagine what social media would be like, can't you? You know, it might just be the butt of all jokes. So it might be now the time, I think, for Frank to just take him out of the firing line and just give him a few days off and, you know, just give him a break.
OK, Don's internet is on the brink. Let's see if it can hold out during extra time. Stevie, if Atletico Madrid win La Liga and Suarez will be top goal scorer, then where will Koeman hide his face? A big goal once again for Suarez at the weekend. He seems to have fitted in really well at Atleti, Stevie.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate for Koeman. You know, sometimes you have to make tough decisions. Decisions that might seem pretty obvious at the time, because I think the way Koeman wants to play involves a lot of running. And Suarez at this stage of his career isn't up to doing all that running. And so you make a decision. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And right now, because of the way that Atleti are playing, then Koeman's looking bad. But it's a toss of a coin sometimes. And unfortunately for him, everything is going wrong for Koeman.
Would Diego Costa be a legitimate help to Wolves or Arsenal, Don?
Oh, I can't see it. I think if you're Arteta, the last thing you need is to bring Diego Costa into your club. I can't imagine that would go down well. And I don't think Nuno would be looking at that type of signing either. I think both teams have got sort of settled squads. I know Arsenal need to do a lot of work getting players out the door, but I can't imagine Diego Costa is on Arteta or Nuno's shopping list.
As a manager, would you rather build your team, Stevie, around Joshua Kimmich or Kevin De Bruyne?
Oh, Kevin De Bruyne. You don't find too many of them. Listen, Kimmich is great, but I would suggest it's a lot easier to find a guy like Kimmich than it is to go and get a De Bruyne. So 100% you build the team around De Bruyne.
Who would win in a match, fully fit Liverpool or Bayern, Don?
Oh, Bayern at their pomp and Liverpool at their pomp. I would edge towards, and this is no bias whatsoever, I would edge towards Liverpool.
Of course you do.
Well, they mulled them in the Champions League, didn't they, a couple of seasons back?
Yeah, it was a couple of seasons ago, though. They've improved since then.
Yeah, but you said, you know, on their pomp.
Right.
Liverpool.
Stevie?
Do you want me to answer that?
Of course.
Yeah, Liverpool.
There you go.
Hold on. So, considering that both sides at the best, right, are just absolute dynamite from middle to front as an attacking force. So the tiebreaker's got to be the back line. So at the best, then there's no question Liverpool's back line at the best is better than Bayern's. So there's a tiebreaker, Dan. That's why I'm
what
saying
what are you
Liverpool.
Looking at there, Stevie? You're looking at a 0-0 or a 9-9?
Well, it's funny you say 9-9, considering it's a German team we're talking about.
Nine. Work contract talks, much of a headache during your careers. Did you have agent...
That's 0-0, isn't it? Hold on. 9-9 is 0-0.
Is it?
Right?
I always thought 9 was 9 in German.
It is. Yay! Well done. Yeah, I love a 0-0, but I also love, in Germany, a 9-9.
Oh, there you go. I never knew that. Wow, language lesson from Stevie. Now, Don, you went to millions of clubs. Were contract talks much of a headache during your careers? Did you have agents who dealt with them, or was it up to you?
I didn't like having contract talks. When you see players sort of negotiating contracts, or someone like Gini Wijnaldum, you know, stalling on a contract while he's got Barca, it would never sit well with me. I wouldn't play well. It would always be in the back of my mind. I'd want to get that sorted. I want to get that fixed. I want that security. I had it at Everton where my contract was running down. My performances were still decent and I ended up going to Sunderland, but I wouldn't be the type of guy, I don't think, that would play in my prime if I was trying to negotiate contracts. So let your agent do all that.
Stevie, I can't imagine this bothered you that much.
Absolutely did. I was the same as Don. See, the difference is was Wijnaldum to likes of when I played in the 80s. The money wasn't outrageous. The money was obviously better than what your average person was earning, but it wasn't. It's not like today where you just get one four-year deal and that's you set up for the rest of your life. So, you know, the stability was always in the back of your mind. So I was a bit like Don. When these things were coming around, I just wanted to get it done and dusted so I could just switch everything else off and play football.
What would hurt more, Don, being sincerely booed by your home fans during a poor performance or being ironically cheered by away fans after an embarrassing error?
Definitely ironically cheered.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely. I've been booed off many a time by the chicken run at West Ham, and you take it on the chins and you move on. If you got ironically cheered, oh man, that would hurt for days.
Stevie?
Oh no, I'd go for the first one.
Yeah.
Aye. No, I wouldn't. Listen, I couldn't care less. I couldn't care less what the opposition fans think of me. I did care, however, about what the home fans thought, so I would go with the first one.
Final question, and it's to mark a momentous day, the first day, of course, of Steve Nicholls' diet. No beers and no carbs is the plan. And Don,
torture.
It's up to you.
Honestly.
What percentage do you give Stevie of sticking to his diet till the spring?
Zero.
Yep.
Absolutely zero. I'll give him 48 hours.
I think that's generous. How are you feeling, Stevie?
Oh, it's going to last longer. Well, I've given myself the weekend. I can have a few beers at the weekend. So it's kind of be a Monday to Friday job.
Right. And you...
That makes sense.
No, I'm feeling two things, actually.
Right.
I'm feeling very confident, but very depressed about it.
Why don't you get people to sponsor you, Stevie, on social media?
Yeah, get people to pay for you to lose weight.
Oh, I never thought of that. Oh,
that's a good idea.
I've only thought of that before.
So, Stevie,
I never thought of it.
Tuesday and Wednesday, normally I imagine your routine would be wake up late and then put on the soccer and watch the games in the afternoon with a couple of beers. What are you going to do tomorrow?
Yeah, do the show.
Yeah.
No, that would be, yeah, watch football, do the show, and then have a couple of beers, then have some dinner and go to bed. No more, I have no idea. I'm actually off Tuesday, Wednesday. I have got no idea what I'm going to do.
How's your mood going to be in the house,
actually,
Stevie?
Oh, just don't talk to me. Don't talk to me.
Right,
just leave me in isolation. That's
it. That brings us to the end of the show. What do you think? Big bowl of potatoes, pasta and the beer for us, Don, and we'll leave Stevie with...
Yeah.
Well, you can still have mince. That's good, Stevie. Just a little bit of ground beef.
Aye, I'm having mince and veg.
Beautiful. There we go. The Steve Nicholls diet book, by the way, will be out at the end of the year. You can get that via Amazon.
Yes. Big, thick one.
Mince and veg.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.